And we're live. Welcome to Agents of Speak, the companion show to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Episode 2, Season 1. This is Ben Fiore with you again, and joining me tonight is, we have Dave.
Hello.
And John.
Hello.
And joining us as a guest host tonight is a guest we've had on the show, who goes by the pseudonym of Comics, known as Brian. Brian, why don't you introduce yourself?
Kablam!
Nice. So, luckily, the government shutdown did not keep the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. from doing their job tonight and presenting us with some excellent entertainment this evening.
It may, however, interrupt them fixing the plane.
Perhaps. We'll dive right into it. I'm going to go through a couple points in the show. We'll talk about what we thought about them, and we'll go from there. The first thing I was going to mention is, so starting right off the beginning, they did a plot device that's not uncommon nowadays in shows, and that's the out of sync storytelling element by showing an event that happens in the middle to late end of the show, as the cold open to the show, and then jumping back in time to the story as it leads up. Not uncommon in television in general, definitely not uncommon for a Joss Whedon show, and I think it was an interesting opening. What do you guys think?
It's usually better served if the situation that they show in the beginning is well written enough that you're sitting there going, how in the hell did that happen? Or how did they get there? This was like, okay, plane, they blew a hole in, so you knew, you could kind of guess.
I have to agree, because like, I thought it was a really good episode altogether, except the beginning. It felt like a cheesy device that they didn't really seem like they had a good opening for it, so they just did the old flashback to the climax.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a very good open at all. I think, as a matter of fact, by the end of it, it kind of felt like, hey, we need to open with a big action piece. We don't have one that makes sense here, so take that one from later and just put it in the front.
I hear you, and I agree. I think I like that type of device sometimes when it works. There definitely were, I don't know if any of you were Firefly fans, but there was an episode of Firefly that did a lot of that continuity shifting that I thought was an excellent episode. Yeah. Brilliantly done. But in this case, all it really served to do was basically give you a non sequitur event that you weren't really sure what it meant. Like, you had Coulson saying, you know, it's all blue skies, and then you see the side of the plane blow open and someone fly out. And so that without any context, it gives you a completely different picture of what might have happened there that doesn't really get resolved until you actually see the events that lead up to it. So, I agree. I see that they were trying to give it that opening action sequence to add excitement, but I don't know that it was necessary to do it the way they did. So speaking of plot devices, I'm actually going to jump a little bit further forward towards the end here. They had the whole, with the blowing the hole in the side of the plane, they had the trademark air getting sucked out of the plane and people getting pulled out through it.
Yay.
I know that we all probably know that the physics of it doesn't work out that way. That right. In reality, yes, you'd have a pressure exchange to equalize, but once that's equalized, it's done. You're not going to have things continually being sucked out like it's a vacuum.
Yeah, it's usually equalized instantaneously, and you'd have to have been right next to the wall.
Right.
Apparently, Josh doesn't watch Mythbusters, because they did a whole episode on that.
And Cracked had an article on it, too.
But it makes me wonder why they think that if that would continue to happen, if that is, in fact, what would happen if the side of the plane blew out, why an inflatable rubber raft would stop.
It's a S.H.I.E.L.D. rubber raft.
Yeah, of course,
that's even an issue, man.
It also made me wonder if they're going to every week now take something from Iron Man 3 and incorporate it into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Last week we had the extremist bomb guys, and this week we had the plane blow open.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, government plane with a hole inside.
Maybe next week we'll have somebody in the War Machine armor.
Well, I don't think I would have a problem with that per se. That would be interesting.
Well, you did see the end, right? I mean, not the end.
We'll get to the end.
Line.
We'll get to the end.
Okay.
Let's not jump to that just yet.
Because even when the raft hits the side, it's just the size of the hole. So yeah, physics, it would have gotten blown out. Yeah.
And just the jagged edges of the hole should have caused, like, there should have been punctures in the raft, mm-hmm. and it probably would have got sucked out of the hole. But it served the plot device they were trying to do there. And I'm not going to begrudge them that. You know, some of these tropes are we know that they're used and we know that they're inaccurate, but they are also fun and expected to some degree. So
it's a comic book TV show. It's not Agents of Physics.
but a little bit of grounding.
Yeah. I think they already kind of jumped the shark with grounding by having a platter that has X-ray technology built into it in the first episode.
Or how about a flying car?
Right.
Dumb.
So, along the lines of technology, we did see a couple new devices shown in this. For instance, that rod that Ward stabbed into the ground and caused that pulse wave that knocked out all the rebels. That was an interesting little piece of technology.
Yeah, I was thinking of, I was going to call it an EMP concussion grenade, because that's what it kind of looked like on screen.
Yeah,
very similar to a weapon in the Halo game.
Yes.
Definitely very concussion grenade like.
Well, if anything's open and we're going to see a lot of stuff like that, they're going to have a lot of trouble managing. That old problem with storylines where it's like, okay, in this episode you had the staff that blew everybody back, but then you come up with a situation where that would have been perfect and, oh, nothing like that exists anymore. You know? You gotta watch when you introduce new technology and new weapons and that sort of thing, because if they aren't an option every time forward, then you begin to get the feeling that it was just, it was basically a do-X, you know.
Right.
They needed a do-X
at that
moment.
He happened to have in his back pocket that worked for that situation.
So, John, are you saying that this is a show geared towards comic book nerds, and comic book nerds have a tendency to overanalyze everything?
No.
Dave, I think you just said something very interesting. You said this is a show geared towards comic book nerds. And into the second episode of it now, I'm not sure that it is a show geared towards comic book nerds. It feels more like a show geared towards the Disney show. It's like a Nickelodeon show almost.
Well, I think it's geared towards a broad audience. I think that they it's primetime television. They have to consider a broader audience. And, you know, as I did last week, I was sitting there with my kids this week watching it together. Nice. And they enjoyed it, and they had a lot. They thought it was a lot of fun. And I think in that respect, they held their attention. And honestly, even with the simplicity of some of the things, you know, my kids were having trouble keeping up with some of the events that were going on. And had to explain some things. There's definitely going to be stuff in there for us, but there's also going to be some level of watering it down to appeal to a wider audience, and I'll forgive them that. So
are we going to talk about the life model decoy in the room? I mean, come on. Any mention, oh yeah, you went to Tahiti. It's a magical place. Hey.
It's something you do every week. It's kind of cute.
But at some point, I mean, we're talking about all these agents are incredibly smart, so at some point they're going to pick up on the fact that it's, you know, it sounds like a recorded answer and, you know,
perhaps.
There's something going on there.
I'm not going to rush them on that one. Let them take the time with it. We'll figure out where it goes in the course of the season. It's not something they have to answer in the first or second episode.
Well, you know what? Let them take their time with it. I'm cool with that. But don't rub it in my face every week.
Right.
No. Yeah. If you had it in the pilot, I'll give you that. I'll even give you this one. Next week, we need an episode with no mention of, oh, he doesn't even know, or, you know.
Right. And even, like you said, in this one, it's forgivable because Skye is new to the team. She doesn't know much about their backgrounds. So that was news to her. So I think it's fair for that conversation to have happened. But yeah, there definitely needs to be some effort to avoid bringing that up like over and over again. So along the lines of the story to it, I did find it interesting. So yes, last week we had the introduction episode where you basically saw all these people coming together for the first time. This definitely had the feel of a little bit of the, you know, borrowing a theme from the Avengers. This is the episode where the team learns to be a team, where the team is you know, getting to know each other and go from being, you know, catty and you know, having friction to being a little bit more cohesive. And Coulson summarized that, I think, fairly well by saying that, you know, that you just gave them a common enemy, which allowed them to get there.
Which, did he allow all of that to happen to give them a common enemy?
Yeah, that
might be stretching a little bit there, John. I don't think he assumed it was going to go in that direction.
But I have a question about the team itself. In the Avengers, I mean, and I don't want to be the naysayer, you know. I mean, I really want this to work. I'm a fan, you know. Mm-hmm. But I understand the need for the Avengers to be a team and for that team to exist. I understand the need for S.H.I.E.L.D. to exist.
Right.
I'm not sure I understand why Agent Coulson needs to put this particular team together. Like, I ran it through my head a couple of times. I'm like, well, why would he need this team?
I see what you're saying.
They're like the SG-1 of the Marvel Universe. They're the first responders. And if they can't handle it, then they call the Avengers because nobody else is going to be able to handle it.
Yeah, I guess the point of it is I'm sure that a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. has a lot of things that they're juggling. You know, this team seems to be focused on some out-of-the-ordinary cases. You know, things that are a little bit more unusual than the run-of-the-mill unusual things that S.H.I.E.L.D. typically deals with.
I kind of think it would be a better way to say, like, if they said there was other teams like this.
Right.
You know, like,
and Coulson maybe that proves that. Maybe they will in time.
Like, Coulson happens to lead this team, but there's 20 other teams in S.H.I.E.L.D. doing this because, you know, they might be busy dealing with this gamma bomb that they found that was built by Hydra, and then someone else finds another 804 to go run after that, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. Like, I agree with what Brian's saying. Like, other than that kind of explanation, why does this one particular team exist?
Because it's Torchwood America.
Oh, don't mention that. I just saw those.
Yes.
Let's hope not.
But there is a similar vibe there. I mean, those who are Torchwood fans, it has a similar vibe to the, you know, the type of team that Captain Jack ran with Torchwood, that it was this rogue, you know, it technically had a mandate, but at the same time, it didn't really have a clear directive. It followed, you know, whatever direction Captain Jack took things. And in this show, I see a similar theme that Coulson is whatever Coulson is, he's been given the latitude to sort of form a team and do what he wants with that team, like take the missions that he wants to take, you know, amongst the roster of things that are available. And maybe there's some direct tie-in between that and what Coulson is. Like, say he is a life model decoy, you know, gone sentient, or whatever he is. Maybe that part of the whole mandate for this team is to allow him to develop and challenge the, you know, the archetype of what he is to see how he performs in the field.
He's an advanced marketing robot. Get
up from
here.
So.
All right. So something else too, besides the life model decoy, the hinting at a relationship between Sky and Ward.
I was gonna say.
No, I kind of felt it's too early to introduce something like that. Like, let the characters develop before they develop a relationship.
I don't think they introduced a relationship there, though. I think what they introduced was them learning not to be enemies. They could have had the same relationship, the same conversations, the same steps with them being two guys, and you wouldn't have made that assumption. I think you're making that assumption because they're a male and a female. They're taking on a you know, it's a matter of Ward doesn't think she should be in the team and eventually sees her value, and now he's taking her on as a mentor. It's like a, you know, Obi-Wan Anakin team up kind of deal there, and hopefully you know, she doesn't go dark in the similar analogy to one I just made.
Yeah, I think they're definitely headed into that whole relationship thing now. I definitely that as well, and that's another issue that I have with it. As much as, you know, as much as I'm finding myself very conflicted now. Like I really like it, but I'm like, I think I want to like it. You know, I think I just really want to like the idea of it. And there's a lot of it in there that I'm like, it's all right. The shield.
Yeah.
Well, I think the one problem that I see with it though is if they go that route and they do the relationship thing, I swear, if they do another one of those, well, they're almost together. Oh, something happens, they're apart. Oh, they have to grow back together again. Oh, end of season three, they get pulled apart again, and she was a clone. And if they do that for a couple of, you know, I'm tired of the old writing trope of, you know, we can get a bigger audience by having sexual tension. There is so much more tension you can have by writing a couple than you can by waiting for them to get together.
Can I posit a theory though? I don't think that they're going to follow the standard writing trope of the that will they won't they romantic entanglement type thing. I think what's more likely to be what we see here is yes, there's definitely some degree of them coming closer together, and Ward is taking her on as a mentee. But we also saw at the end, Sky was still in connection with Rising Tide.
Yep.
Rising Tide, and you know, said I'm in. So she might push that to some degree, as a not because it's natural, but because she feels it's a way to keep her cover with that, with being inside of that team. So we may see that aspect of it, that she may push it, and we'll see how he reacts to it.
I'll take your theory a little bit farther and say that it's possibly she's going to do something to betray the team, but then her relationship with Ward makes her change her mind.
I could see that as a possibility.
She had the facial expressions for that.
She has the facial.
Well, no, you look. She's playing it like she's she's playing it like she's conflicted. You look.
Right.
They did the close up, and you know they're making it look like she's kind of conflicted about saying I'm in.
Well, yeah, she definitely was conflicted about that. But where that, I don't know if that spells out necessarily where that this is going to go. That she's necessarily. Yeah, I could see the possibility that they could. That's also a bit of a trope to say, all right, she's in, she's going to play the romantic angle a little bit to try to sweeten the deal and throw off suspicion. But eventually when it comes to a point where she has to actually do something that's more overtly a betrayal of the team, she may be driven to pause on that because she has actually developed some real feelings for either for Ward or for the team in general.
I think it'd be more interesting for Ward to piss her off, and then she'll turn on the team.
Yeah.
Well, this is Joss Whedon. You never freaking know.
That's true. That's true.
She could be the big bad of season two.
I hope not, because she's kind of the most interesting character of season one.
Yeah, well, I think the mystery is what makes her interesting. And also, I think she's relatable, because she's not as military as the rest of them are. So.
Well, I don't think the two techies are really military.
They're the equivalent of analysts.
Yeah, I mean, they made that quite clear in this episode too that they just weren't ready for field work. So, yeah,
they remind me of all the squints on Bones.
Yeah, definitely. They do have that that squint vibe to them. And I actually was reminded of Bones last week with the whole crime scene investigation they were doing in the fire scene. Especially with that dichotomy that I talked about, where the one of them was like, you know, ready to jump into the carnage with a spoon, whereas the other, you know, was looking for an exit.
Yeah.
So.
And does anyone have the same fear that I do, though? They're definitely
spiders.
Clowns.
They're definitely setting up all these characters to be complex. you know, and
you think they're gonna overdo it?
Yeah, sometimes it gets overdone.
I don't have a fear about that. I think that complex characters are realistic characters. I think to do a flat character is a failure in writing. So mm-hmm. I think that they have to make them complicated characters. I think that they could make it overly dramatic. That could be a possible area that they could reach too far. But complexity, I think, is necessary.
Right.
Complexity is good as long as they don't get to where the points where they will do something like, you know, he says something offhand and she gets way ticked off, completely out of character ticked off. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Something
you know, just to drive a plot. I'm sorry. What?
Something like "Don't call me the Calvary." I felt like you were gonna hear dun dun dun.
Yeah.
Real.
Yeah.
Although what I did find interesting with that character with Melinda May is the whole popping the wrist out of joint thing, mm-hmm. which was very I had a Lethal Weapon vibe to me. I instantly thought of Riggs from Lethal Weapon popping his shoulder out.
I'll be honest. So far in this show, I like Agent May. I like Coulson because I've always liked Coulson.
Yeah, and Coulson's like great.
And if everybody else had died tonight, I would have been okay with that.
Oh god.
Yeah.
They all got ripped out of the plane. Oh well, new team. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, the squints have their place, and yeah, they're not necessarily lovable characters, but they're necessary. They're necessary right. parts of the team, and well, hopefully they'll prove themselves worthy later down the road.
They flesh out their backstories.
Sure, mm-hmm. and again, you know, if we're comparing this to other Joss Whedon shows, there are plenty of throwaway characters that have been introduced
yeah.
early in those shows that prove to be vital later on. So,
true.
So there's plenty of potential there.
I think my only issue with them, though, is at this point, I feel like they could be replaced by Jarvis.
Yeah.
You know, they need an episode.
I don't know if Jarvis is smart enough.
They need an episode that highlights their personalities, I think.
I don't like that they named all their drone cameras after the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Because we learned about Bashful last week.
Yeah.
I'd like to know why.
Because
there's a reason he gave...
Disney owned them.
Well, really, but I mean...
It has more to do with a number. They probably made seven different variants that have different specialized capabilities, and seven just lends itself to dwarves.
Exactly, which is why I want to know, you know, that would be an interesting, you know, side note in another storyline.
I'm sure eventually there will be some website, either an official website or some sort of fan aggregated wiki website where it has like the details of what each of the seven ones are and what their specialties are. Like,
and,
you know, Sleepy has the ability to do X, and Bashful has like advanced, you know, sensory, whatever, you know, olfactory sensory capabilities.
I like that about you.
and then there'll be the fan fiction.
Yes.
What do they just do with those robots when the lights go out?
What do the robots do to the robots?
I was told this was a family-friendly show I was coming on.
Yes, yes.
If there's,
we play games, children.
If there's fan fiction that gets made into a comic book, would that be coming full circle?
It would not be unheard of. So
there was something else I was going to bring up, and I can't remember what it was. So I'll let you guys riff a little bit while I try to remember.
All right. Well, then let's just talk about it. You know, the scene you said you weren't going to believe until you saw.
Okay.
Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury. Yep.
It happened.
Yes, it happened.
That was awesome.
It happened, and it was great. It was the best scene in the whole show.
It was a great scene, actually. It was great to see him reaming out Coulson for already having, you know, destroyed his plane.
Who was waiting for him to yell about snakes?
Different movie.
Yes.
Now, I know, but he was on a plane.
But yes, but I loved how they ended that scene. So they had that whole thing of and him, you know, he cooled down afterward and made some. You know, some comment about, you know, better not leave a scratch.
Authority.
Right. But then, you know, or made some comment. And then Coulson, like, radio's like, you know, we're going to have to skip the fish tank.
That was cool. I mean, that scene all of a sudden felt like it was, you know, cut out of the Avengers or something. Like, extra scene
yeah.
in the movies, you know? Sam yeah. Jackson's excellent with that character, and the two of them together are great.
We now know that he likes bars a lot, apparently.
He's a really nice bar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
But so, no, it's one of about authority. I think I'm at it.
But I did make a joke with Dave earlier because he was telling me that Nick Fury was rumored to cameo and showed me the little eagle with the eye patch on it in the trailer. And I said, well, if you look at that eye patch, it doesn't really look like an eye patch. It could be, say, Thor's codpiece.
I saw somebody online today saying, no, it's going to be Odin. And I was like, you think you're getting Anthony Hopkins? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're getting him anytime soon. He's got better things to do.
I'm surprised they got him in Thor 2.
Yeah.
But we did talk about that last week a little bit, too, about cameos from the other actors, and apparently yeah. it's a possibility.
Apparently, and apparently the one that I said was very unlikely is the one they ended up doing exactly. in episode 2. So let me think. What is the least likely cameo they're going to do next?
Robert Downey Jr.
I'll second that one. Yeah. So that's what will be in episode 3.
Black Widow.
I think they should do a whole episode where Steve Rogers is just walking around the agency and they have to keep hiding Coulson from him. It'd almost be like that episode of DS9 where they went back to the Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh, God.
Yes.
At the table. Like, that would be cool.
That would be interesting.
This way, Captain Rogers. No, this way, Captain Rogers.
Mm-hmm. You don't even have to get Chris Evans. Just get some guy with his build. You just walk by.
But no, I
really would like to see if the actors would understand that just one cameo engenders such goodwill with the fans. I mean, any of them does a cameo, and they will be showered with gifts and praise at any of the cons. Because
I think most of them do realize that.
Yeah, but you always hear about stuff about, you know, well, we couldn't get them because of contract negotiations or whatever. It's all BS. It really...
Well, that's the really interesting thing about this. I mean, I don't think we've ever had this before. This is a television show that's actually being run by the same studio that's making these movies.
Yeah, it is a bit unprecedented.
It's the same company signing your, you know, $30 million contract to be in Captain America 2 and 3 that's making this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. It's a logical jump to say, for the amount of money we're going to give you, you're giving us 3 movies, 1 Marvel one-shot, and 20 seconds on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Do you think it was in the contracts? I mean, how long have they known that they were doing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they were planning out the, you know, the different Marvel levels or the acts or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know if they had it final phases, even until like this past spring maybe or over the summer that they knew it was going to be picked up as a fall scheduled show. So, well,
another thing is too is, like Brian just said, it's the same studio. So how hard is it while they're filming the next Captain America, grab a camera and say, okay, Chris Evans, just film this cameo real quick and we'll stick it in the next episode.
Sure, that works. Yes, it's the same studio, but is it literally physically the same studio?
No,
like,
I'm sure.
Is it likely that they're filming this in, you know, a studio adjacent to where they're filming Thor 2: Dark World, so it's easy for Chris Hemsworth to just, you know, walk over to the set for, you know, 5 minutes to shoot a scene? Maybe. It's hard to say. I don't know the logistics of that. That would be awesome. If it is, that's great, and maybe they can, maybe... I think they're probably wrapped up principal photography for Thor at this point. But, you know, there's definitely some, and actually that's probably one thing they can push with that is with this show running, you know, I don't know how far in advance they're filming these episodes. I got the impression that episode 2 wasn't in the can until, you know, after episode 1 aired.
Mm-hmm. I got the impression too. They actually had a line in the show that she talked about him be surrounding himself with all these pretty agents. And that's actually a very large criticism I've seen online, that they're all so good-looking. So it struck me as really strange that all of a sudden in the second episode somebody actually acknowledges it. Right.
That is pretty surprising. But, you know, agents are going to be in good shape, and, you know, sometimes pretty comes with that. But that aside, so yeah, so if they are truly just sort of, you know, recording these at most a week or two ahead of time, you know, it's easy. So that right now Thor is coming out next month. And so it seems logical that if, you know, it behooves advertising for the movie, which we saw during the show, it behooves their advertising efforts to have those cameos show up in the show. So right. if we see any in the next two or three episodes, my guess, my money would be on it actually being some degree of Thor cameos if it fits for them to show up somehow. Maybe not Thor per se, but some other accessory character maybe showing up.
And it isn't unheard of. It isn't unheard of in situations like this for them. I can't remember right now, but there have been situations before where they've got a TV show going and they do movies. But it's not unheard of for them to use the budget for the movies to, you know, like, okay, we built all these props for millions of dollars. You know, instead of putting them in storage, let's put them on the TV show or, you know, or sets, you know. So they get a lot more production value for the TV show than they would normally would with a standard TV show budget.
It effectively lowers the cost of that.
Yeah.
Or we get better stuff, better explosions.
Yeah. Well, with Firefly Serenity, it was the opposite. They had the set stuff left over from the show that made the movie easier to shoot or cheaper. So
are we talking about the eye patch now?
Well, we did kind of talk about it. What else did you want to say about it?
I've had enough.
Just that he was cool.
On this plane.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I did like the tie-in with Hydra. I thought, you know...
Yeah.
You know, actually pointing that out instead of just dancing around it. You know?
True. That they had a direct acknowledgement of you know, events related to Hydra and Germany and Captain America. Although
And Thor's hammer.
The one thing that I was kind of suspecting. So they when they first showed this thing stuck in the wall of that temple, I kind of, and especially when they mentioned that it had been there for a millennium longer than the pyramid was carved, there was an implicit like temporal shift element there, because they said it also looked like it was German engineered. So I kind of expected it to somehow there be a time travel element that somehow got introduced there in the storyline.
Well, we still don't know what happened to the Red Skull, right?
That's true.
He's right on the other side of that wall. They were so close.
I'm here. Let me out.
Well, it is a tesseract, you know. It has an element of time travel to it. So
yeah, that's where it gets all the energy from other parts of time. So yeah, I think all in all it was a good show. And I think we've definitely spent enough time talking about it. That's not,
you know, we didn't mention it all.
What's that?
We didn't mention that really cool Macy's robot. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was my favorite piece of tech from tonight, that Macy's robot.
The Macy's robot.
I'm going to go there looking for it.
Much better than the app.
I don't even know what the app's supposed to do. Let's get that robot.
Yes. Yeah, that's how I'm doing my shopping from now on.
Macy's robot. The best throwaway moment in the whole episode is when the whole plane is messed up and Sky just puts the glass on the coaster.
Yes.
The broken glass on the coaster.
Well, it was an act of solidarity. It was you know, showing she's part of the team.
Cool.
So, yeah, I thought it was good. Let's do a quick, you know, give it a, you know, out of 10 capes, what did we think about this episode? Dave, we'll go to you first.
I like this one better than the first one. The little plot holes aside. So if I was going to say, I'll say 7.5, because I think it's going to get better. So I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to rate this one real high and then be disappointed from now on. So I'll say 7.5 right now.
Okay. John?
I'll give it 6 eye patches. I think they can do a lot better, especially with Joss at the helm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, this was an episode.
Yeah. But he's only softly at the helm. Like, he is involved, but he's not there directing and writing every episode.
That doesn't matter. His greatness should rub off on the people that are making these.
Well, it is. Like, the people that are working on it are people he's worked with time and time again in these shows. So it should be there already.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go with you on that. How about you, Brian?
Five.
Okay. I'll say I liked it a lot. You know, the small, you know, defiance of physics that there was there here and there, I'll forgive. So I'll give it a 7. I think it's good. Solid. Definitely makes me want to keep watching it, though. Because it didn't ruin it yet. So.
Not yet.
So, all right. Well, I think we can wrap up there. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. And, you know, and so I'm going to sign off here. This is Ben from Superhero Speak. And you can reach me at my email at ben@superheroespeak.com or through our Facebook page, facebook.com/superheroespeak, twitter.com/superheroespeak. I also have my own Twitter handle of Beardiac, which you can follow me there. Throw it to you, Dave.
This is Dave signing off. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. And, yes, definitely check out the Twitter. I'm the one who's tweeting during the show, and a lot of you guys were tweeting back and forth with me, and it was great, so let's keep that up.
And I'm John. And you can probably reach me through those two guys. Also,
don't expect him to answer emails.
Well, you know, John, I think you set me up as john@superspeak.com, so...
And also, we have our website, superheroespeak.com, where you can also listen to all of our other audio podcasts. And we'll be putting, as we said before, this will be thrown up in audio format in a couple days, and it'll be available on YouTube later tonight for those who aren't watching it live. Brian, yes, you're a guest, so I'll let you go ahead and promote whatever you want to promote. Thank you for joining us, though.
Oh, thanks for having me. My name is Brian McKevitt. I write for thisisinfamous.com. And that's where you can find me, should you have any reason to.
they should. They should have reason to. All right, well, thank you guys for joining, and tune in next time.
Thank you. Take care.